I listened to a few more of his things.
Oh, how many?
Who's he?
Well, they're long, you know. I mean, they're all very substantive.
He posts, well, people, like, you know, he gives, like, interviews and podcasts, and then people put clips. But then, yeah, he just puts whole two-hour lectures.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson, he's a famous psychologist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is he the agnostic, or what you're talking about?
What is he exactly?
No, I have only ever heard him make, like, he makes the case, like, religion is useful for describing a different set of truths, like, metaphysical truths about, like, how you're supposed to act and be in the world as humans. So I don't think he's ever actually said, like, flat out, like, I believe in God or this or that, but...
Did the door get locked by mistake?
Is it me?
It was an urgent knock, meaning someone really wants to be here. Either that or they have to go to the restroom.
Yeah, is this a place where I can dump? Let go of things I don't need anymore?
Unburden myself.
How's it going, man?
So did you watch the whole duration of that one I linked?
I listened to as much of it as I could.
That one wasn't one of his better presentations. Maybe he was tired up there or something, but the first hour, I thought it was like, man, he's really making a case for it. Sweet snacks.
Yeah. Well, I was enthralled by his opening remarks, which had a breathful philosophic tone. But he got waylaid by his own intelligence into so many, you know, cul-de-sacs of competing tidbits of curious information.
Yeah, he seemed to be going off.
Diluted the, you know, the real thing that he began speaking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, otherwise it was a great conundrum he was starting out with. He just never really... He didn't get to it in the amount of time that I kept listening.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I listened to some other interview with him, and this Peterson guy. Canadian guy, right?
Yeah.
He's got that about...
He's the cut the crumb at the frog voice.
Yeah.
Crumb at the frog here.
You have to use the word substantive, so it's got to be...
Right.
Got to be meaty.
Well, yeah, the man's a genius. I mean, he's...
Huh. How'd you find him?
Yeah. Found him?
How'd I find him? I'm just listening to different, geniuses.
Yeah,
never know just you find when you
general it. Genius hunting.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I
feel. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. Thanks.
Wait, I'm going to finish that series, so I'll be curious to see if he ever comes back around and touches that again.
Yeah.
I've listened to enough of him where I've heard him sort of make the same points in different areas, and so I'll be curious to see what he says about it. But I'm not expecting anything too profound, at least like in this area of things.
Yeah,
because he sort of, I mean, I wrote that email response to you. It seems like he still thinks there is something, that more definite and concrete that then creates the ephemeral world that we all inhabit.
Yeah, right.
Also, too, I feel like he's just, in doing the psychologist thing, looking at it from, like, a pragmatic view, like, all right, there's people here reporting symptoms. What do I do to orient them to alleviate these symptoms, in the most effective way? And it's sort of, he does even, I'm not sure if in that one, but I know in other ones, he flat out says that, like, all right, like, what are you going to do with your life? So he, like, tries to orient you with towards a goal, but then like even makes the case that like, look, like you're never going to get to that goal of happiness. Like you need to just be constantly orienting yourself in a way that's going to be oriented, working for like it in a meaningful way without any like,
yeah.
Maybe there's, you know, I don't know, something else like not doing that. Like just it's sort of admitting defeat. Like, but I'm sure he probably deals with people that then like add that on that layer of meaning onto the world, like as a defeatist or nihilist, where then that becomes like depression. So I can see where,
yeah,
how he ended up where he is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of sad but cogent insights into a hierarchical society, right? That prides itself on materialism and progenitorism as, you know, signs of success. And then the inevitable authoritarianism that has to accompany a society thus structured. So then the jury's out whether that hierarchy of pattern recognition contributes to joyful sustainability or compromises, you know, the capacity for joy so profoundly that, you know, out of despair and consumerism, the constellation of the species just consumes itself. And looking for causal elements philosophically or religiously or cosmologically is a wonderful pastime. And we have, you know, all of these great works to turn to for answers and insights. But they're all partial, incomplete, you know, flowing generously within a more miraculous field of absolute ambiguity. And very few of those, if any of those philosophical and cosmological linearities, cause-effect linearities, are willing to stand up and say, we don't know. Figure out the best way to enjoy yourself and call me in the morning. Yeah.
I guess everybody takes that pretty literally. Like, figure out the best way to enjoy ourselves. All right, what do I got to do now?
Well, and they're that was
on task.
Yeah, and that was part of his, you know, criticism was the indulgence of the pleasure island, right?
Yeah.
Way of being absent identity, absent maturing loyalty to something, then you know, the pleasure island temptation becomes so strong. So yeah, I thought, you know, it was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
Social commentary, insightful. Yeah. You know, social commentary for sure. It didn't quite dip into, you know, the frightening incline of realization, but
yeah, it seemed
certainly
like he,
helpful.
You know, just sort of touched the surface and was like, all right, then how am I going to, like, use this to continue working, like, on the side that everyone
relies
on?
Yeah, right. There's a commonly repeating, though what could possibly repeat, conundrum where a consciousness that is inspired through communion to explore itself, it runs into a familiar kind of wall. That wall is the, as far as, let's say, the conceiving mind can go. the mind that operates through metaphor, comparison, contrast, and derives conclusions and causal presumptions about the exciting, if not terrifying, nature of firsthand experience, and insists on making a thing a thing. That's the wall. That's just a lofty way of saying, God, I'm so tired of my own mind. It's a lofty way of saying, of holy fuck, it's me again, and I'm losing patience with how repetitive and predictable my own consciousness is. I'm weary of the conclusions that I draw emotionally and psychologically and behaviorally over and over again, and I have this strong sense, you know, of cosmic smell that I stink and that there's something that has a finer perfume that might be other than me. So yeah, that's a good day, or a good lifetime, more to the point, when you've hit that wall. Oh, I see the billing begins. They're on to you. Yeah. So what does one do? What does one do with the unshakable, demanding nature of present experience, and coupled with the biological urgencies for comfort and warmth and shelter and food and novelty and touch and, you know, whatever luscious craving might be entraining you, right? And then, you know, what do we do with, you know, so-called masters of the craft, like Buddhas and Krishnas and Christs and Ramakrishnas?
I watched that video, but I couldn't ever find the crowd's reaction to Krishnamurti expanding the order of the Eastern Star, was it?
Yeah, I think that might have been more anecdotal. You have to read the biographical stuff.
Yeah.
When many of them flipped out and, you know, wanted to remain with the theosophy they'd known, and others were so understandably enamored with Krishnamurti, you know, whether carnally or, you know, sacredly, that they wanted to continue to listen to his style of, you know, pontification.
It was a good speech, though. I mean, he just tore the path down and the religion and everything up around him.
Yeah.
And dropped the mic and walked away. And
yeah, yeah, right. Drop the mic, right. Boom. Yeah. Perfect stand-up.
Yeah. And he was young, too.
Very young. Yeah. He was, yeah. He was groomed. Mm. He had been groomed.
I bet there are some pretty pissed off people.
Oh.
We groomed and we groomed and we get this.
They warned
the real thing.
They warned they warned everyone. They said, you know, this fucker is the Maitreya and he's gonna have a, you know, a new message and you better be on your toes, and he didn't disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the most empowering thing anyone could have done.
Yeah.
Because, mm-hmm. you know, you look at a set of eyeballs and you go, there it is.
Yeah.
And immediately you've displaced
yeah.
your center.
Yeah.
Or the center of presence and of life. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens so easily.
Yes. You
know, some kind of worship, external worship.
I predict those people at the time, you know, before he stepped down and when they were grooming him and they found and all this.
Yeah.
They thought they were doing some big shit thing.
Well, they've all been they've all been reincarnated as the Pebble Hill members.
A step up or a step down?
It's nothing other than pure arrogance to think your life or anything you're doing is some big shit. Because there's been plenty of dead people that thought they were doing some big shit.
The Order of the Star now goes to Pebble Hill Camp.
Yeah, I remember spiritual conferences, some of those workshops. You know, the reason you're here is because you've been called to be with this select group in order to change the course of whatever, how special we are.
We love that shit.
And I could smell something funny in the room.
Yeah.
We love that shit.
I'm feeling it.
We humans love this
That's
stuff.
Why we eat crispy coconut rolls.
Now, that I can say might seduce me into doing things.
Yeah. I mean, let's get serious about this. So you have, 7 point something billion, so they say, on a spherical, perhaps flat Earth. You know, now it's up for grabs all of a sudden. And the 7 point something billion sure enjoy eating whatever nourishment and calories they can get their hands on, according to their karma and socioeconomic well-being. Mm-hmm. And we're capable of, feeding the 7 point something billion minions through still somewhat, from a Star Trek point of view, prehistoric methods of harvesting energy from the Gaia sphere and burning it. Yeah. So a lot of the psychic tension that we can see evidenced on a geopolitical scale could certainly have a lot to do with an instinct that we're just not so conscious of, that the capacity of the lusciousness of the biosphere to sustain the mouths of 7.3 and still counting, though perhaps slowing, may not be, a perfect calculus, a perfect convergence. Just like, we see evidence of animal species take flight before, a major event occurs. There's vibratory signals. Electromagnetic vibratory signals that, large events that could be threatening are picked up somehow on their radar, and they start to flee.
That's what was happening last Saturday.
Okay.
We registered it.
Yeah. Though human beings tend to be far too clever in many non-utilitarian ways and absolutely stupid in ways that would be utilitarian, we're on to something. And so, the stress of, the crying out of the loss of habitat and accelerating species extinction, we can't escape it. Though we may bury our minds in the trivialities and the various recusements of attorney generals that perjured themselves in front of the Senate. Yeah.
What do we do? We talk about it a lot, but we're not really doing anything.
What there is to do it is kind of up to one's, karmic impulse.
Call Jordan and give me some shit to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Jordan Peterson, the guy, the psychologist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a lot to do. There's nothing to do. There's utility gained and lost from the doing and the not doing. There's really no implication for the display of consciousness in its, phenomenal expression. If one is understandably identified as a finite creature within the confines of a rather finite and repetitive mind, then you have a certain quality of crisis, you know, on your hands. If you're of an enviable socioeconomic class, you're concerned about a whole bunch of different things than if you are a single mother working two jobs, wondering what all those wealthy feminists are talking about. So it's just, you know, it's kind of like no matter where you turn, you've got high and low pressure systems colliding. And so, you know, you have tornadoes everywhere. And those tornadoes of incongruity between one way of thinking and another, one sense of identity and another, I mean, those of us that are here this evening have sufficient free time and some degree of figuring out socioeconomic stability, as meager as it may be, to have enough gasoline in the car and a belly with enough calories to stop in and have this conversation. We really have no right to be here, you know, at all. And yet, hello, have a coconut macaroon. Kick back and, you know, talk about shit. So, who knows? Yeah.
To speak to that that divide from, you know, the point, too, that Jordan was making, was that both sides actually pull, like, two different realities almost, that they're not even perceiving the same objects or patterns. Like,
yeah.
So it's like, how are you going to reconcile this?
Not, right? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if this is can be characterized as a highly specific flow of perfect ambiguity about which anything can be thought, felt, and said, good luck agreeing with anybody about anything. Let alone your next meal, you know, or your next plea for affection or help, or whether you call someone for a date and they answer the phone and say yes. You know, my goodness. And then, you know, to make matters worse or better, depending on your predilection, if all of experiencing is, you know, just a presently appearing, you know, impulse myth that has no actual genesis, no cosmology, and no implication, and all you're being treated to is the view of Krishna, or, you know, however you might want to characterize that, then anything you derive from experiencing as concerns yourself and space and time and implication and how you're doing and how can you do it better is just, you know, a frivolous after-the-fact news reporting that denies reality in a somewhat wholesome manner. It's a strange fucking human being that finds themselves interested in getting underneath the charade of, you know, manifest expression to see if there's a solemnity of any kind underneath there, you know, that you can, you know, wear as a scarf or whatever. It's quite rare. Though there are so many people attending to you know, meetups across or not, right, across you know, the greater area.
Did you kick anybody out successfully?
No, I don't know, maybe one or two people left.
I mean, like, did you make a post like, if you're not actually coming, leave?
I politely put up a discussion that says, here's the ways you can enjoy the night sky sangha, and if you have no genuine interest in attending, you needn't be a member of the meetup. You know, but no one really reads anything. The whole thing is so casual and so superficial that, you know, it's easy to join. It's more pain to actually unjoin.
We should all unjoin.
No.
And there is no reason for it.
Yeah, well, it's...
do anything.
The only advantage it might have, and I'm not encouraging it, is that for those people that actually participate, if they are joined and say, I'm coming, hi, then it might look to someone else, oh, people actually go to this thing.
Oh, there we go.
I might also go to it, but I think
I'm coming is a little too much. That's like,
yeah, why? Yeah, that's what I mean. Don't do it.
I just show up every chance I get.
That's right. Don't say you're coming. God, really.
Too much.
It's just too much to ask. So you have this unsubstantial nagging beauty in your face, your melting face, 24/7, and you're privy. You have a first row seat, orchestra, loge, or wherever you like to sit. You know, in the nosebleeds too. You have a perfect seat, unobscured, actually, to your own phantasm. Now we tend to not see the full Monty of the phantasm because our habit to go to narrative is seemingly so strong that rather than dwell in, you know, wisps and flutters of a more, what's that gal's name in Peter Pan, the fairy? Tinkerbell?
Tinkerbell.
Most of what's happening, if not all of what's happening to us, is actually in the Tinkerbell realm. Mm-hmm. But we don't have vocabulary for it, and actually the onslaught of it is so disturbingly profound that it's hard to actually rest in the witnessing of it. So we, by training or karma, no one knows why, we refuse the view of the shimmering, pulsating nature of actual experience, and we turn to what appears to be causative narrative, which is a story told about myself and my past and my present and my future and my stuff and my sentiments and my sensations, all of which is concocted in a profoundly hallucinatory manner. But that's what drives us, arguably, what drives us insane is that we have concocted an imaginary realm that we think is actually binding and have managed to subsume and ignore the actual miracle field that experiencing is. Okay.
I think it's funny, I had a good little flash or flicker earlier in the week, and I was like, oh, like, I, at least what I consider myself to be, is just a thought. And then, like, you know, that was, of course, on his brain for some amount of time, and then, like, the next set of thoughts is, all right, how do I get rid of that thought? Why does it keep appearing? What are we going to do about this? We're like, holy shit, just more thoughts chasing other thoughts.
Yeah. Right. And that triggers, you know, an annoyance cycle. So then the biology of, you know, rejection occurs, which is another object, which is reified, you know, autonomously and automatically. And so we persist in the deliberate or involuntary refusal to parse what's actually occurring by remaining in imagination.
I mean, the physical response to your imagination is...
Well, isn't it wonderful?
Stronger than, like, the way you respond
yes.
to the real world.
The, the somaticization of one's imagination is what you could say contributes to, you know, the self-accusation of I'm suffering. You can think any fucking thing you want to think, but you don't suffer. The suffering is the somaticization of the implication of things sought and unsought, craved and averted, presumed as past, present, and future. That's where the suffering comes in, is the irritability of, you know, of the physicality that gets triggered instantaneously, right? Apparently instantaneously, or even we could argue pre-instantaneously, since so much research has been done on this knows what's coming next before it knows what's coming next, right?
I think Jordan even talked about it, maybe not in that one, but the different systems, which are like not the regular conscious brain, but you know how you walk up to it out on the balcony of a you know, your motel or hotel room high up, and like your body knows, like there's a rail there, there's no distance, but like, you know, that like consciously, but you walk up close to it and there's something like deeper pre all of that,
yeah.
Like fear, like cliff,
yes.
Like you could fall and just like...
He was making the case of being safely behind a glass barrier with a snake.
Yeah, you can.
And you should just be able to sit there and smile and not flinch because there's glass there.
Yeah.
But something else is saying, get the fuck out of the way of the cobra strike, you numbnuts.
Or seeing a raccoon, like, right there on a screen, like a raccoon was hanging from a screen and I was right there. Something was saying, do not get this.
Right.
Even though
too close for comfort.
It was bizarre.
Yeah.
And animals are subject to that, too. You know, they
Use like
experiments when they... Where they put like a glass floor and a little kitty will walk over and look down.
So we could consent to the insight that there are a number of either competing or cooperating intelligences, so-called within us, that are participating in the creation and assembly of the world in which we think we are functioning. That our rational interpretation is, you know, one of a dozen schizophrenic personalities that may be giving us other indications of what's safe or unsafe or what's real or unreal or, you know, what we need to do next to thrive. So we go to narrative, typically by default. Going to narrative is a way of, compartmentalizing, reducing, or defining the impersonal profundity of firsthand experience, and then making it about myself. That's why someone like Gary Weber, would emphasize that his enlightenment was punctuated by having no thoughts. He's kind of a foolish man, but it's hard to tell him that. I mean, once you're acclaimed enlightener, you're flawless.
It's
too late now. You'll never outlearn that nonsense. But that's fine. That's just part of the field, right? Yeah.
I wonder what's like actually going on in his experience, if anything. I mean, I don't know how people can just keep doing the same shit they do, and it's like.
Wow.
Everyone else can see that, like, what you claim is happening is, like, obviously not. Like, you're still talking and, like, doing things that people who can't do. Like,
it just may be a naive way on his part of doing his best to characterize.
Redefining what's a thought.
His inner experience. So he doesn't have, more poetic language.
I'm not having thoughts. I mean, yeah, it looks like I'm having thoughts, but they're not mine. I mean, I guess that works. Yeah.
It's hard to know. He doesn't go much further than that proclamation. You can't get much more intimacy from him. You know, the next step after being convinced that he has no thoughts, now it's all, the rest is all about him. Yeah, the inner narcissist gets rolling. But hey, listen, we all do that. Why pick on Gary Weber? You see, to characterize one's so-called spiritual accomplishments from the vantage point of human memes, right? Human suffering or the absence of human suffering is so fucking tiny. But it sells because, you know, if you're suffering, one is suffering from narrative and from the existential frustrations that Peterson was talking about and inability to launch on the pyramid of hierarchical success, then are you depressed or have you failed to launch? The symptoms look the same, exactly the same, but you don't know what to call it. So since the social structure is dysfunctional, if you aren't able to make your ends meet within the social structure, then that the failure to do so, whether it's finding a partner or getting a parking spot or a job or being listened to, you know, whether it's racial inequality, gender inequality, right? Having the tombstones of your family toppled by cowards at night, then you're really upset. You might not be clinically depressed. Yeah. You might just be suffering what a hierarchical society has to offer, which is the shame of failure. You might otherwise be okay. You just can't get any corroboration. Right. Because you have to participate somehow in the harvesting of fossil fuels and the consumption of them to keep your belly full. If you're unable to do that, you know, then you may as well be a hippie. Get some, you know, take some edibles and get under the covers. So, you know, like, so what do we want? What do we think we want? What do we think we need? What do we think we're entitled to and just hasn't, you know, our ship just hasn't come in yet?
As many coconut rolls as we can possibly stuff.
I know that feeling.
I don't know how many years that you could have a life like that. You could just eat them infinitely. Like, how many years steady could you just eat them? Like,
yeah.
And the first time I had them, I had a third of a bag at each sitting.
Oh, my God.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's commitment.
It is.
It's good. Well, Paul Hederman, you know, woke up thanks to heroin, so anything's possible.
I'm on the sugar plan.
Nice. It's a good plan.
Wouldn't you say when things are sort of working and the five senses indicate that there's a self and a world and a life and things happening, that to question it or to see that perception is folly wouldn't have any traction.
Would be counterintuitive.
Winning, I'm not going to up in the boat. Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's almost like really. The prerequisite to entering into a conversation like this is when something goes awry, something fails or breaks or cracks or exposes the circular nature.
Most all, I mean, I know it's absurd to speak in these generalizing tones, but you know, the doorway to most spiritual curiosities is one or other depression. Mm. The failure to fit into the hierarchy that the society has laid out for you, your unwillingness to fit in, your inability to fit in, the fact that it's just not stoking you. Or, you know, other forms of frustration.
Or you fit in and you get it's all meaningless. And I remember pretty distinctly when I was with my first husband, and he was more successful than I was. We were successful and this and that. And
yeah.
And when I really got that the goal of our whole life together had been to retire early, and I realized, what the fuck would I do with myself, and I don't even think I want that, and what am I doing?
Oh.
It was like I fell off. Like,
yeah.
Something just no longer jived. Like, the meaning was just seen through.
Yes.
There was no meaning there, and I was just kind of...
Right.
There was...
Yep.
Was just floundering.
Well, so that ruination illustrated, you know, by the early agreements of a marriage no longer being sufficient to hold it together, is a great illustration of the generous amount of ruination that's right at hand.
Anytime you're willing to look.
To become anything, to amount to anything.
What do you think gives any kind of meaning? What do you think hangs you together?
Yeah.
Makes this thing make sense? All you got to look
at. Yes. And this was, a cogent, you know, part of that particular lecture was to stop being, you know, in your early teens or 20s in terms of being, you know, ambivalent and uncommitted to participating in the society in a maturing manner, and grow the fuck up. So that was being spoken, you know, from the point of view of what we might consider healthful human development, the cultivation of communication and job skills and successful employment or entrepreneurship, not just in the financial realm, but in the realm of affection and partnering and reproduction. Doesn't have to be all the way to yacht ownership. It could be, you know, rentals at the shore.
Yeah. That would have spiced things up for you, a little yacht ownership.
Yeah. We need a yacht ownership.
I have Yahtzee.
That's right. Blue collar yacht ownership is a couple of beers and a good game of Yahtzee. Yeah. That's right.
First time I played, I got 5 snake eyes.
Wow!
I did. I got a yacht.
That first never
roll,
happens.
All 5?
No, a second roll.
Wow!
I had one of my friends get that. I think the game we were playing, you're looking for 3s, and he rolled a whole handful of 3s. We calculated it was like 1.3 million odds. Like, and we're like, what the?
Yeah, that was a lottery win. You would have been better off buying a ticket that day instead of playing Yahtzee.
Yeah.
You blew your good fortune on a game.
Yep.
Could have been a multimillionaire and dead by now.
That would have been great for a 16-year-old. Let me tell you.
Do we find, is it possible to find, you know, a non-demonstrative ecstasy of being? We don't want to go all roomy on this shit because that's just so indulgent. You want practical, non-demonstrative liberation. That's what you want. Anything more or less than that is just going to trip you up. That's why, you know, miraculous and rare spiritual beings are an impediment. Because they're too fantastic in their behavior and in their, you know, samadhi-like immersions or magical powers that leave the rest of us blue-collar Yahtzee fuckers in the dust.
I just watched the documentary on...
We can't get a leg up on this shit when I compare myself to, you know, even Gary Weber.
That's
I'm no good
here.
Even compared to Gary Weber, let alone Ramana Maharshi.
I watched the documentary Yogananda, and man,
toast.
The people that Yogananda left behind, it was like, holy shit, like, there's even, I heard like, maybe 2 minutes out of the hour and a half, like, devoted to, like, what could be discernibly a teaching of value,
right?
You know, and the rest is just, like, hero worship, and you're just thinking, hell, like, oh, man.
He was deep in it.
Yeah.
He was, yeah, Yogananda was deep into, what I would call, you know, a far too frivolous, exaggerated set of yogas to be of value to anyone. And so now the institution that has survived him are kind of a quasi-Christian, you know, meditating circle of buffoons, which look no better than what we do. They might not even have coconut macaroons. So we win.
Yeah, but if they're a happy buffoon, why not?
Yeah, I'm right. I'm not not criticizing anything, just making fun of it.
Yeah, I'll take that over the polo.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, even the Buddha tried to encourage the middle way, but he became too fantastic or too fantasticized to turn out to be of much value, because then it turns into another cult of hero worship and you're jammed again. Just go to any fucking Buddhist place within 20 miles of here and you will be sorely disappointed by, you know, the indulgent mediocrity of the idiots that practice that fucking shit. So what we're after is practical, non-demonstrative liberation. And we're in luck, because here the fuck it is.
And if that doesn't work, we'll just snack.
And yeah, snack on the way. See, if you're attuning to what's appearing in and as experience as the barometer or the harbinger of whether you're enlightened or not enlightened, you're looking in the wrong place. Looking for love in all the wrong places. Something like that, right? You're looking for signs of liberation or the amelioration of suffering in all the wrong places by hoping that what you deem to be your first-hand experience can tell you anything about anything. So you're duped by the profound pressure of first-hand experience and the narrative that you so-called give to it to think that it's actually what's either bothering you or what needs to be resolved.
So who wrote that program?
The architect.
You know?
I love it. Yeah. The architect. Yeah. Wasn't that from
The Matrix?
I love it. Yeah, that's right. The architect. Who was the architect? It wasn't the guy with the keys. That was somebody else.
There's some guy. I mean, you know.
Yeah, there's some guy.
It was some guy.
He was some fucking guy.
What?
The architect? Yeah. It doesn't, you know what, not to single you out, but no one needs to know who. There's no who. This is not anthropomorphizable as a who. The Horton knew that.
Or you could even say what. You know, what?
Same problem.
Sure. What sets us up?
Same problem.
To look out of a set of eyeballs.
You have to go right into the profound intimacy, which is your own liberated soul,
yeah.
Which is, do you need to turn the miraculous pressure of this demonstration into a discernible narrative and therefore find out who or what? Stop. Don't. Don't do it. You needn't. You see, that's what I'm saying. Don't look to experiencing, which we think and perhaps is sovereign, to give you any clue as to why or how you might be suffering, or to be the field in which you will become relieved from suffering. By even going to experience to do the most subtle extrapolation, boom, you've got samsara. You're a product of samsara. Now that that's occurred, you're like, well, how do I reimagine this so it hurts less? Fuck you. Have a macaroon.
Just going back over the same mental tracks.
Yes.
And it seems to me that anyway, it is pure inadvertent, just happenstance. I mean,
you are a product of inadvertent happenstance.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't plan your way out of it.
There's nothing happening. Every so-called moment, I mean, this you know, the nauseous pressure of phenomenon is gone. Always gone. It's always gone. Always gone. But it doesn't quit. How is it that it's always gone and won't quit? Fuck, it must be I need to make something of it. Oh, I'm suffering. Well, now I have to go to a meetup. Not going to work. It's not going to work. The Pleiadians are not going to help you. The Andaran crystal is not going to help you. John of God is not going to help you. No reason not to go see John of God or have a macaroon. But nothing works. Why does nothing work? Because nothing's actually occurring. if you've convinced yourself that you're the product of experience and therefore have a million and one reasons to lament over, you know, your condition, it's too late.
Well, there is a tendency to want to repeat an experience that gives us something, some satisfaction or some pleasure or some inspiration. Or,
yep.
You know,
sure.
I'm not going necessarily anywhere with it. I'm just...
Right.
Well, I mean,
chimpanzees are, you know, capable.
You know, dark side of the moon, like, you know, 50 times. I'm just starting to get a little... I mean,
yeah.
It's been happening for a while at this point, but
right.
Because, you know,
I have to keep taking stronger drugs to enjoy it.
I think maybe if I take stronger drugs and listen to Dark Side.
There you go.
You know, maybe I can get
yeah.
a little bit more mileage.
A little more mileage out of it.
You know.
Yeah. The lunatic is on the grass. That would be me listening to this fucking music. Once again.
Roger Waters is coming to Philly.
All right, let's go see him.
And pass it around. I'm ready for a toke.
Yeah, right. Light it and pass it.
$100.
Then turn up the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's just for a normal seat.
Normal.
Yeah, I mean, normal out in the boonies.
Moody Blues are coming to the Sands to play, you know, their famous Days of Future Past, like yeah. 40th anniversary
oh,
or something.
That should be fun.
Oh, yeah.
I saw them up in Allentown a couple of years ago. That was a great place to
Man see. Music Center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Pavilion or something?
That, the steel piers, or I'm not piers, but, you know, that old factory that they...
Oh, they played there.
Outside.
Outside, yeah. The music fest.
That was nice. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
They have purity in their sound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what gets us going back? So, really good concert. Or a really good macaroon.
Yeah.
Or a really good teacher.
Yeah.
You know, a really good book.
Yes.
A really good movie.
Yeah.
But then also you could ask the same thing. What makes us then sick of them?
Yeah, really.
After assuming we're going to get the same hit or satisfaction. I mean, I used to eat peanut butter like it was the best thing on the planet, and then, yeah, I get tired of it.
Yeah.
Even macaroons don't always hold the allure.
Oh, sad news. I can't hear that. La, 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 la. Please don't go 86 on the macaroons. La, 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 la.
Lying in the coconut. Brought to you by the Ultimate Codependent Love Song.
Oh. Can't live if living is without
you. Let me get this straight.
That was one of my favorites. But what has us remember things that were like fun and pleasurable, and remember things that we really wish we don't want to remember, and it's just like hangs on there.
There's no, you know, there was no Big Bang. There's no Genesis. There's no implication. There's not actually anything substantive occurring at all. And yet the profundity of what appears as experience and sensation and the narrative that we bring to it, you know, seems to be absolutely unshakable. And so by virtue of the force of anthropomorphization, by the force of animus that we discover in ourselves quite involuntarily, then we want to know who and what, why and when, where and why. But there is no such thing. This is, could we say, just for fun, absolutely irrationally appearing. It's not made of anything and it has no author. There was no Genesis.
Well, you could say this much. If there is an organizing principle.
If you like.
I mean, just the way it sort of plays with life.
Or a disorganizing principle, you could argue at the same time.
Is it entropy or negentropy?
That's true. A good storm can really destroy a lot. But then you know, some seed.
So, you know,
I know, I've gone down this track before.
Well, the you know, kind of pure Dzogchen teachings, and not just found there, of course, but elsewhere, relieves one of any discernment whatsoever. So there's no processing of the presence of experience.
So, well, there's, if there were processing of it,
yes,
forming a track,
The processing of experience.
And then you have a track.
Animates.
And then this,
animates.
Desire to
self.
Get back on track.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So if there's, freedom, but not freedom as contrasted with non-freedom, because that objectifies it again.
Yeah.
What you're looking for, what you're made of, what you're, what your resolution is, the reason why we come and do this, the driving force behind having a conversation like this one, kind of a frivolous blasphemy that it is the irrationality of emptiness itself, kicking it around. And it's not going to be satisfied by who, what, when, where, why, because there is really no causality. There's just the untenable miracle of excruciating being. And that's even saying too much, because you can have pride in that as well. So how does the beige, the seed of pride, get removed? That's the question. Because here this is. And if you don't animate it or anthropomorphize it or make a claim about it, which creates the hell realm of self, then you're good to go. It's doing itself. It's clearly doing itself. I mean, like, magically, nourishingly doing itself. And all you're being exposed to, you could say, attention is being exposed to, is the most, subtle tapestry of shimmering impulse. And then we convert that shimmering impulse into these, cogent, seductive, right, inebriating stories. And then that, you could say, willingness, unbidden, to participate in narrative creates the sense of angst that accompanies the imaginary durability of oneself. Now you have to go to a meetup. You have to do Vipassana.
I'm just going to sign up.
Sign up. Don't go. Yeah, that's the enlightened way. Just sign up, but don't go.
You probably have way over 50 at this point, by the way.
No, it's just around...
I was 47 when I looked last week.
Yeah, no, I haven't updated the bakshish, so I don't know if it goes to 49, whether a 50th person gets turned down or whether it's the 51st person that says, you can't join this meetup because, they're capped. So 30 or more people that don't give a flying fuck about it are going to make it impossible for someone that really would like to participate. But they'll find other means because you can't stop this.
So you screen them. Yeah, you ask them a question.
Yeah.
In order to get in.
Well, that's actually not a bad idea.
There's a question.
Yeah, in order to join, please answer this question. Do you give a shit fuck goddamn about anything? If the answer is no, then come.
Yes. So do you know any of those people? Are they like prominent?
Some of them I recognize, through... Pebble Hill and sure. Other circles, but most of them not really. Yeah. Oh, well.
Some could be incubating.
So to have, a sufficient irritability, and we're talking, psychosocial, right? We're not dismissing all of the legitimate suffering in the world. That would be too much hubris to bear. I mean, there's a lot of suffering in the world, and for good reason, and it's not just because of, wrongful association. I mean, this is a lofty conversation, So we're, you know, since we don't know what else to do with ourselves, let's say, we spend a little time in a lofty land of exploring the texture of consciousness, because we are so sufficiently successful on, you know, the socioeconomic chain, even with whatever meager resources we may have, that we can do this. So, okay, we do this. This is the gift of, contemplative adventure, the gift of mindfulness in the peculiar way that we practice mindfulness. So as you withdraw from the reflex to embody narrative and therefore reify yourself as a creature with a past, a present, and a future that's either pleasurable or unpleasurable, which you have to then continue to have anxiety about, micromanage and strategize, you can maybe gift yourself with a certain permission to be free from that impulse for a little while from time to time. Be free from that impulse for a little while from time to time. And see what else might be tugging at your sleeve that wants your attention, which is not the resolution of any particular imaginary problem, psychosocial or otherwise, but instead is a direct encounter with practical, non-demonstrative liberation, which happens to be this. It's nice not to know where you came from, or why, or where you are, or where you're going next. It's quite cleansing for presence to be sufficient without any further, name, blame, or justification.
Well, it's a relief. It's a relief, that's for sure. It gets so tedious. It's so difficult. When it all has to go back to some story or, contrivance.
Yeah. There's the inner guru and the outer guru, they say. Both of them are quite happy to take your life without, wincing. One pulls you and the other one pushes you.
So what's the opposite of a guru? Is it a mental, snafu?
Well,
that does the same thing. Because I think in terms of having this mental anguish through the week, and then the weekend comes and maybe we have something going on.
Yeah.
We have these high hopes, we'll have somebody over and it's like, man, what was I thinking?
Well, if you're inviting muggles to your home for a little relief, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're nice. You're a nice guy, You're opening your home warmly to... But, you're having criminals come into your house.
Yeah, really.
Jeez.
I mean, I was recently invited to a wedding from a dear friend from high school days who, I love forever. And I don't have any reason to hesitate to go, but I also have no genuine incentive to go. Not out of lack of affection, but it's like, if you want to pay my airfare and set up a meeting where we can talk about reality, count me in. But if you want me to be, a fellow muggle amongst, a gathering of other muggles, I'm just not so sure I want to do that. But you don't want to be rude, to anyone or off-putting because you think you're in some kind of a condition that makes you, unavailable for socializing.
Well, there's also the hope that there's somebody out there that's an acquaintance that's willing to sort of go off the edge, maybe, it hasn't happened yet, you know, with any of the our, you know,
yeah,
mutual friends.
You mean do something more than look at you with a really weird look on their face and just like
it just goes subject. Nowhere. I mean, it just goes nowhere. You know, I've done it. I don't know how many times I'll go up, and they're just like, yeah. I mean, it just doesn't go anywhere.
You know, if you are, you know, open for so-called others that know you in a certain way to frame you in that way, then, well, that's very kind of you to do. But I think it's also quite reasonable not to do that.
I know.
To cut certain ties, you know, with the world of reminiscences, because what's really vital to you is the liberation of presence. And that's the way you, you know, wish to revel in life with others. So if that kind of invitation is present, you know, all of your calories jump forth to say, well, absolutely, count me in. But if you have to dumb yourself down to participate either socially or politically in a way that's non-offensive to other people, well, don't go. I mean, Jesus said if you bring forth what's within you, right?
Yeah.
You liberate. If you refuse to bring forth what's in you, it will destroy you.
Hmm.
He wasn't fucking around. So
that was Thomas, I think, the Book of Thomas or something, or one of those.
I mean, I'm a poorly read idiot when it comes to just about anything.
I think it was one of the Gnostic.
Okay.
Texts, I think.
So yeah.
What does that mean if you don't bring forth what's in you?
Well, if you continue to tamp down the wildness that is insisting for you to liberate, it will fuck you up.
Well, the liberation will fuck you up too. You're sort of
and you are absolutely damned if you do and damned if you don't. Yeah, one is the, what do they say? You know, the devil that you know and the devil that you don't.
There's no turning back.
You know. You know, in this case, I'm just, maybe it's just temporary depression or something. I'll whip up a whole bunch of enthusiasm and jump on an airplane to go to Denver and the hotel and all that stuff and probably have a great fucking time. But right now I'm like, no.
I have a second cousin's reunion that's happening. I blew off the first one and now they're going to California and I can't do it. It's like,
yeah.
My sisters are going to be there. Cousin, it's like, I just can't bear it.
Yeah.
Does not sound attractive.
I know.
I don't have a lot of family in there. It's kind of unprecedented, but it's like, can't do it.
I mean, I can't even find the calories to run off and go to, you know, a Peter Brown event somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh boy, everything is failing.
You still have us.
Yeah, no, this is fun. This is in our backyard. We light a few candles, eat a few macaroons, and it's, you know, it's a rocking good time.
Yeah.
Low stress.
That's one thing that I tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah. What? Low stress?
Yeah. Minimize inputs and stress.
Sure.
So there's a lot of spaces in between whatever it is that happens to be passing through or by or into the eyes or ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when it gets busy, I want to go away or do something else to make it not busy again.
My world is busier than shit right now. I'm like astonished. And I'm not doing it. Like, I'm pretty clear it's being done to me.
Hmm.
And it's all okay. I don't have a thing to complain about, but I am busier than shit. It's okay. I don't suffer with the things I used to suffer with. Like, I can look for the suffering and it's not there.
Oh. Just like cruising through.
I have to put up a testimonial page then on the Ninth Guy Sangha website.
I'm not saying I don't suffer some, but not with the same touch points I for most of my life.
This
is all the retreats you went to. Don't claim.
It's all that shit that I ask meditating.
Touche. I apologize.
Well, you could take the reductionist. I came, I saw.
Not true. She was suffering all the way up to that whole Byron Katie thing.
Bingo.
It takes a good dose of ruination to start to relax.
I will say that it's just a handful of friends that I know through the Byron Katie thing are more open to this than anybody I've had a contact with.
Yeah.
The people I've hung out with in the work that are serious about it and willing to just kind of question everything.
Yeah.
You sort of roll this out to them and they're like, yeah. Yeah. Like they get it.
Yeah, sure.
I just do.
Should we put down a few extra cushions for them?
I don't think they're not going to come from Florida and Maine.
Oh, sure.
Kennett Square, maybe.
Yeah.
Like recovering Catholics, right? Recovering Katie's.
Oh, yeah.
Although they're not recovering, they probably still like it.
I think they do, although I don't really do it with them anymore.
Well, everybody has a message to deliver, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I think of going to one of the kinds of things that I used to go to, it's like, well, I'm just going to have to put up with this message, you know?
Uh-huh.
Whatever it is, it could be a message I'm not aware of yet. It's just going to be another message, you know, another approach, you know.
Everybody's selling something.
Yeah, I mean, they may be very pure in heart. I'm not
denying that.
Even
if they're not selling it for, like, money in their pocket, they're selling something.
But, Well,
what would this look like if we didn't need commerce, right? We didn't need to do anything to get something to then exchange and what would this I have reflected on that
a lot more African dancing
I think there would be an unstructured ecstasy, you know?
I think people would still be amazingly productive. People would still do a lot of shit. Whether, if there was no money involved, some people would still do a lot. Other people they probably wouldn't, but people, they're just naturally, we do shit.
It's a communal tribal type of situation.
As long as there's monster trucks, I think we'll be okay.
To protect us. With big flags sticking out the back.
Monster trucks, Confederate flags.
Yeah.
You know, and chicks in really short jeans. I'm like, this is fantastic. Who needs to go to Mars now? That's just one man's idea of what an ideal society would look like. I hope I'm not speaking for everybody.
Okay,
it's working for me. Let's dial this in. Dear Mr. President, let's rethink this.
There's something here for everybody.
The, you know, the pressure of identification and narrative and temporally oriented consciousness is, well, you know, it seems to have legs.
Yeah.
Part of the, you know, the yoga of combat with it is to defang it. And other metaphors that can accompany, you know, that hero's journey, heroine's journey, depending on the cosmology that you're borrowing from, you know, is also the opening of the rainbow body, which is the gradual disidentification with a narrow frame of reference as concerns sensuality, and discovering the unboundedness.
And then there's always the Seinfeld principle, where that episode where he just does the opposite and it like works like a charm.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, I feel like I've been doing that. Like, just really don't care and just dive into all kinds of shit, and it's just like freaking working out.
Yeah.
It's just, it's astonishing the level of don't give a shit and devil may care that's happening here. And I used to freak out over a lot of stuff, and it's just,
right.
There's no freaking out. It's just, holy shit, this stuff hangs together whether I'm doing anything or not.
Yeah.
Or not. You know, it could all fall apart, but it hasn't so far.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's nice to evaluate one's, let's say, recent days, right, and find novel and pleasant, you know, behavioral or philosophical approaches to things that in the past might have driven us to become a intolerable control freak inwardly and outwardly, and to encounter, you know, similar novelty or chaos and flow through it in a very agreeable manner. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, you know, if you were practicing TM, they'd say, oh, that's a win. Keep doing your mantra. Mm-hmm. And not to be antithetical to that way of perceiving one's life. In this so-called present moment, if you could find one, you'd have no such story.
It's like being sure that you need strings to make this puppet go, and then having no strings and then just watching it go.
Yeah, sure.
Like, holy shit, it goes anyway.
It does. It does. Yeah, I mean, your interest in the next breath is somewhat involuntary, but it's rather profound if it were compromised. Your interest in the next meal is not so strong right now, but maybe when you get home or tomorrow, it'll sneak up on you. You know, if you still have enough hormones to be interested in one or other form of copulation, that'll sneak up on you too. And if you don't, well, then there's the opportunity for another meal.
C'est la vie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and you know where the car keys are. So you can burn that ancient plankton that's been drilled from the bottom of the ocean and go to a movie or a political rally that talks about climate change. If you're Leonardo DiCaprio, you can make a lovely movie about the urgency of climate change and promote it while flying around in your private jet.
Al Gore, too, man, lives in this huge mansion. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. What's the carbon footprint of the lifestyle of the rich and famous? I'm not holding them, you know, in any disdain. I play Yahtzee. I get by. Any and all topics, if there are topics, are of equal footing when it comes to the simple revelation of the nature of present being. You don't have to deny chemtrails to talk about Ramana Maharshi and think you've made the right choice. You haven't. You don't have to reflect on the validity of your mantra, you know, given you by a TM huckster that wasn't really certified, as contrasted with, you know, what happened at the Oscars the other night. They had to escort the PricewaterhouseCoopers people out of the building with armed guards for fear of violent reprisal. I'm just exaggerating, but And they had to make a point that the two partners, senior partners, I guess, that were involved in the snafu won't be back at the Oscars next year.
Sounds like a Hollywood
story. And all that happened was the guy that saw the, you know, more than lovely, who's the best actress again?
Oh.
So she walked by him, and he took a photo of her after she just won the Best Actress Award and tweeted it out. And they're not quite sure if that distraction, which was the same distraction that King Kong had,
yeah.
You know, if you remember the end of King Kong, you know, the guy said it was beauty that killed the beast.
Yeah.
It wasn't the weapons and the, you know, the airplanes that were shooting at him from atop the, was he on the Chrysler Building or the Empire State Building?
I think it was the Empire State
Building. I thought
Building.
It was Empire State, but I don't
know. Yeah, the Empire State Building, yeah. So, mm-hmm. It was beauty killed the beast, and I think the same is true for the partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers that was just so enamored of the perfume of, you know, the lovely and gifted La La Land actress that he ended up handing the surreal, quasi-conscious Warren Beatty the wrong envelope.
Poor Warren.
Warren did as well as he could with it. He just didn't have it enough together to say, problem here, stagehand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he was hesitant, which was good, but it's like...
It wasn't enough. Well, she grabbed it because she was embarrassed herself.
Yeah. So
and
she just
read it out.
Instead of like, wasn't sure if he was showing her just like...
Can you make sense of this?
Yeah.
Right. Bonnie, can you make sense of this?
I heard Trump instructed Steve Harvey to cause the mix up. Take the pressure off him, make Trump look good, make the actors look dumb, everybody wins.
I like it. I'll get on board with any right. Any conspiracy, I'm in.
Their ability to get
that's it.
Most,
no, it must have been the Zionists or something. The Rothschilds.
But I have to say, I mean, in a way, it was pretty cool because they acted pretty graciously. Everybody was just amazing, from what I could see.
Yes, yes.
From what I heard.
Right. Even those cutthroat Hollywood types managed to be gracious and actually handing the physical object over to the people that actually had won it. Instead of like, I know it was a mistake, but I can't let go. The golden orb of success.
Or they could say, okay, I knew what it was like. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I got a small taste of it. It's okay. I can let it go now. If you can actually find what you think is spiritual is contrasted with what you think is not spiritual, you should come to a talk like this more often. Because it's the perfume of being that's doing the animation, that's doing the work. The content, you know, is really just for one's, you know, entertainment. I mean, there is a transmission going on, but, you know, between whom and whom? Well, it's you and you. The transmission is you and you and you again. It's just unstoppable. It's throbbing, thriving. And if you make no sense out of it, if you slowly, dare I say, a little bit diligently, make no sense of it, well, it will release you. And that's really the simple yoga. Make no sense of it, and it will release you. And the time comes when the time comes. You know, if you have a certain kind of karmic or hormonal allotment to figure out how to win on the, you know, social triangle, well, you're going to be consumed, you know, with that and the depressions, the trials and tribulations that accompany that. But when the time comes and you're, you know, ready to put down your appetite for security or your appetite for success, it's possible to learn how to discard, wean yourself from the insistence of narrative and be released. You don't necessarily have to put on a diaper and you know, manage Peacock Farm. You can just chill the fuck out. And if someone accuses you of being enlightened, that's their problem. If they accuse you of being unenlightened, it's still their problem. It's no longer a measurement that, you know, you are seeking to be held, a standard that you're seeking to be held by. That's relieving.
Yeah, we see the other way around in the native culture.
What?
Elders recognize a youth that's promising and says, we'd like to pass our teachings. But he also emphasized in this story that they never call themselves medicine man, a healer, a shaman.
The title bestowed upon them.
Yeah. Helper. He said, no, there's no healing that happens without source.
Mm.
And it kind of, it fits in with letting the shroud of this and the appearance of this kind of fall away into a deeper kind of a presence.
I think shit can happen despite whatever belief system you happen to be involved with, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Or none at all. Like if they say that, means that people that never heard of this, weren't interested, never looked.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a hell of a note if we had to have a belief system to find our way through.
That would be impossible.
Yeah, that's the worldly way. You got to have this best belief system, whatever it is, and the others are just mistaken. Yeah, that's not going to work for them as well.
The mind is only capable of superstition.
Well, you mentioned pride earlier. I think that's if somebody has it. Well-developed pride, or pride in the way. Those are all
inexorably woven together, right? Mm-hmm. Superstition and pride and fear and violation, exploitation, hierarchical thinking, accumulation at the expense of others. It's all the same thing. And you can't blame the religion on it because, you know, what brought about the intoxication of the religion, right? If you want to look at it through the lens of human development, right, anthropological development, sociological development, you can find all kinds of, you know, weird evidence in the so-called archaeological record that contributed to the fomentation of our discontent. But you'd be mistaken, because all there is the presence that evaporates. And maybe it's possible to, what would you say, behave in a more gracious, non-judgmental, non-fearful manner within your own soul, and therefore have that kind of availability to other beings, were there other beings. But you don't want to play the Buddhist game of, you know, fake it until you make it and attempt to feign or cultivate a compassion that you're not really made of.
Yeah. It doesn't work when you try that.
It just doesn't work.
It does not work.
It doesn't work because then you're just splaying your awkward, deplorable codependency all over the room.
Yeah. Well, that's spiritual pride, I guess.
Yeah,
you could say.
That's right.
Or like spiritual striving. And it's really commonly held in most of society. Like, well, you just do service, like in 12-step circles. You do service, you help other people. And this, like, and it's not a bad way to pick yourself up off the floor and get started again. But in general, there's usually like strings attached and a codependent aspect of it that doesn't serve anybody.
Every freaking time.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I've been beaten up mostly by Buddhists. I mean, I push them to it, you know, to make a point, but
it's the rare being they can give without strings attached. Like that, there's a real difference. Tell us more.
Over there.
The, you know, the revelation of emptiness is what this is, unstoppably so, unflinchingly so, without delay, without skipping a beat. And we, you know, we start to lean into it, spoon with it. When the time comes, spooning with emptiness. Sangha.
Which one do we want?
I was just thinking that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Spooning, cupping, looking.
You know, we're one's so-called, you know, biological perimeter is a colony, right? A constellation of rather remarkable forces. Whether those could be attributed, you know, to so-called cosmic forces outside of the perimeter or sub-biologic or microbial photonic forces from within the perimeter. And the consciousness, if it's the product of chemistry and neurons, you know, becomes a dubious component, then you can't help but to feel small and incarcerated if you are the consequence of something other than yourself. So there's a shift in loyalty, which is blasphemous to most scientists and non-scientists alike, that you are absolutely acausal and sovereign, and you don't think a thing about it. It's not an accomplishment. It's not a state of mind.
Well, when you say you, you're not talking about the whole idea of self. I'm talking about you, no, as in the experiential field of
here. This is, yep, yeah, right.
You, I mean, all these pronouns just seem to float. You know, they'll just float to be whatever they happen to mean.
Yeah,
to the person's listening. You know.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the feeling.
You one is not you two, as I call it.
I am that I am not.
I am that you are.
Yeah, it's always in the texture. It's always in the feeling of, wow, this presence, how do I know this presence? Well, it's felt. This is felt. Before I have a question or a story or a quarrel or an implication or a future, this is felt. And if I don't, if I don't tangle with it by concocting a past or a present or a future as concerns the imaginary perimeter of my body, it's still absolutely felt and autonomous and sovereign. It's liberation. But even liberation becomes a cheap shot, because liberation from what, for whom? And there is no such thing. So it's better than liberation.
Well, I mean, it doesn't
liberation is for people like Gary Weber. This is better.
I mean, I don't know that I would say it's suffering free, because I feel,
yeah.
I mean, maybe I could get to that point. I don't know.
It needn't.
But
be.
I may have all this somatic stuff going on just because that's the way I work my anxiety, you know, my weekly, daily,
sure,
workday anxiety into the somatic stuff.
Yes.
Tensions and all that jazz.
Sure.
And,
yeah. And all of that.
So it's not going to let me forget.
And none of that, you know, though we can appreciate how, to the degree to which any of that kind of tension and pressure, you know, attracts and tries to hold tension, none of it actually interferes.
I guess, right, it doesn't interfere, but it's there, you know.
Yeah, it can
There's still part of me that's like, damn.
It can all go fuck itself. You see, it's that interest that we have in the resolving of subtle or gross discomforts that seem to suggest, you know, the continuity of an individual. There's something, dare I say, quieter than all that, that is not perturbed by whatever symptoms arise. And in the appreciation, deepening appreciation of the unperturbed core, then you could say the quarrel or the disgruntlement with the apparent symptoms lessens. And it's possible the penetration of those symptoms might also lessen. But then that becomes another, you know, kind of healing ministry. And it's easy to get, you know, stuck again in the game of abatement. Because the game of abatement is time. And your liberation is not interested in time. That's this. It's already done. But if I'm hanging on to some form of abatement to, you know, earn some kind of liberation, good luck with that. You know, play it out. Because it's only presence, unadorned, that is liberation. Anything else will concoct claustrophobia, psychic claustrophobia. Thinking, not thinking, no biggie. Getting annoyed, not getting annoyed, good luck. The transcendent is hidden in full sight within the textures of a lot of disagreeability. To think that we need to resolve disagreeability to be eligible to sip from the fountain of the transcendent is perhaps mistaken. You know, being flooded with the lusciousness of presence, there's not a lot of energy for who, what, when, where, why, how. The nourishment is so formidable, it doesn't trigger, you know, the need for a genesis or the need for an explanation. This is a radical departure from the banality of social agreements. This is another order of magnitude of intelligence. This is why the heptapods came to visit.
I always wondered why they came.
Why did they come to visit, those heptapods? Because 2,000 or more years from now, they need our help.
They need our help. Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
That's right.
Already.
And we'd better get our consciousness together so that we can lend a hand, lest we destroy ourselves.
Hey, it's all unity, man.
That's all unity, man.
Either way, it was unity down there. All going to unite to blast them. Couldn't have worked out more perfect.
I know. It's just strange how things come around. Or yeah. The heptapods knew they were going to get, you know, a little blast furnace there. That's why they kept tapping on the glass like, hey, there's a fucking bomb in the room, you know? And the two scientists couldn't figure out, you know, what they were like. I'm not talking heptapod shit now. There's a fucking bomb in the room. And they couldn't pick up the cue. Oh, well. They were still very gracious in saving their lives. You know, just because this is a precious human birth, as, you know, some Buddhists are wise to remind us, might not be a sufficient motivating force to wake the fuck up. Or it might.
Or it's just another distraction.
Or, like most things, it's just another distraction.
That's where I think sometimes nature speaks the strongest to me. You know, spring, summer, you have all kinds of multitudes of expression.
Yeah.
And then winter, it shrivels, it retreats, it dies, it goes quiet, it disappears. It's annihilated in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense.
Yeah.
And then it springs out again.
Yeah.
And it's like the quiet mind, the busy mind, the self that's torturing itself on its own importance.
Yeah.
And the self is, where did I put that? I left that darn thing. Oh, well. Or a simple, simple group that practices with very little accoutrements, and then all of a sudden they do this, and then this, and then this, and then this, and then this. It's like, oh, my head starts to hurt.
Mm. Oh, yeah, right.
I'm busy.
Those intender fuckers.
Yes.
Yeah, they really let it get away.
Yeah, you've heard that. And
yeah.
I did get an update about a year or 2 years ago, and it got worse.
Oh, yeah.
While I was there, they added in something new.
Well, it's the fear of intimacy. I mean, this, you know, this group is, despite ourselves, you know, capable of a different kind of quality of intimacy. We're not distracting being together, you know, with ritualistic superficialities. That group was in such a, you know, panic that they all had to hide out behind one ritual after another.
Well, it's easy to assume intimacy has to do with into me, see.
Yeah, yes.
And then let me tell you my story.
Oh, yeah.
Let me reveal myself.
Right, that's just a vomitorium. That's not intimacy.
That's a new one.
Yeah, I mean, really.
It's a hurl fest.
Intimacy can be a shared thing. You know, I mean, that's real intimacy.
Yeah.
Is a shared.
Right.
What we'll call consciousness or something.
It's limited, a shared depth beyond who I am as a stupid little person.
Absolutely.
That really feels right.
Oh, yeah. Beth reminds us it was Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
Emma Stone.
I knew I could count on the chat room to fill in the missing blank.
What, the La La Land?
Yes. Beguiling actress that threw off the PricewaterhouseCoopers accountant that set this whole horrible thing in motion.
She would have thrown me off, too.
Is that Emma Stone? They are beguiling. I don't know why. What is that about, you know, famous persons that make them so beguiling? It's incredible.
They know how to wear their makeup.
First, the beguiler, the fame.
Yeah.
I think she put it well. She just said, I happened to be at a place when this project happened to be what it was, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, you know, it could have been anyone almost.
Sure.
But then there's that folly of this importance here. Mm-hmm. And then Joe Schmuck walking down the street, scratching his rear end and picking up pieces of trash.
Right.
Is being any less of it.
That's the guy that I want to study with.
The guy picker. Riding his tractor across the country.
Right, right. Yeah. The lawnmower.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is pure arrogance to claim, oh yes, I've done this. I went to see Lisa tonight, and the one
wonderful
exchange that we had that was really the most, I guess, heartfelt was when she expressed her experience of she's not doing any of this.
Mm.
And I think she was kind of referring to, you know, everything playing out, that she's where she is and she's, you know, being taken care of and this and that. She's just, she's not doing any of it.
Nice.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yep.
What a relief.
Hmm.
Because if you're not doing it, then you're not responsible for making sure it happens.
You are the perfume that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens like when people pass on at that point, huh?
That's
it's
right.
Not to be overly grim, but...
Yeah, it's a good sign.
Yeah.
You can liberate and keep going.
Yeah.
Or not.
Well, maybe some people take it as a sign, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I guess this means I should move on.
Hmm.
Nowhere to go, nobody to be.
No.
Let's finish it up, man.
Well, it's been a beautiful evening.
It has been.
Ready.
Thanks
Your
for coming.
Your job is to take some coconut things to Beth.
Well, I'll be happy to do that. Thanks, everyone, for joining us online. Hope you had as much fun as we did.
Excuse me.
That was recorded.
No.